to this week's episode of The Homeschool How-To. I'm Cheryl, and I invite you to join me on my quest to find out, why are people homeschooling? How do you do it? How does it differ from region to region? And should I homeschool my kids? Stick with me as I interview homeschooling families from all over to help me unfold the answers to each of these questions week by week. Welcome. And here with us today, we have Hillary from Idaho. Hillary, thank you for being here.
Hello.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to start by having you tell us how many kids you have, their ages, and then what got you into homeschooling.
Okay, great. I have three children and they all have a birthday coming up in May. And once their birthdays hit, they will be 7, 4, and 1. And we got into homeschooling. I kind of knew I wanted to homeschool from the beginning. My husband was not on board. He had a lot of the, you know, typical reservations about, you know, I don't want my kids to be weird. Can we teach them everything they need to learn? So he was really pushing for private schooling initially. And I did look into that. But the more I researched the history of the public education system and reflected on my own public school experience, I just really strongly kept coming back to homeschooling and thinking that that was really the answer for the type of education I wanted to give my kids. So I homeschooled my oldest, my son, he's the one that's just about to turn 7, from the very beginning. I started when he was in preschool, and we've been doing it for about, this is our third year we just finished.
Awesome. Now, how did you convince your husband that this was the right path for you guys and that your kids wouldn't ultimately end up weird?
Well, I mean, my husband is out in the community enough that he could kind of see what was going on with the youth and the culture and what's being turned out by the public schools. And he also did not have a great public school experience. And so as I was researching the history of compulsory education, I was just like presenting to him, did you know this? And did you know this? And, you know, public schooling is just kind of designed to create factory workers. Is that what we want for our kids? And I brought up statistics of how homeschoolers perform. And I started showing him curricula and really just kind of talking his ear off about it and probably giving him more information than he really ever wanted to know about homeschooling. And he kind of got to a place with it where he was like, okay, go ahead and start doing preschool. Let's see how it goes. And, you know, I'm willing to, you know, step back and let you try preschool. And it just kind of went from there. And now that we're 3 years in, he's become a huge homeschool advocate.
Oh, that's so great. Now, what sort of curriculum or the way did you start out with your oldest child? Because I know unschooling is a big thing, or there is, you know, the pretty strict homeschooling curriculums. How did you begin?
So I had to sit down as a mom, and I even started this when I was pregnant with my son, because privately, even before I started talking to my husband, in my head, I was like, I'm going to homeschool him. Like, I'll convince my husband I'm going to homeschool him. And so I sat down with myself and I was like, all right, what do I want my kids' childhoods to look like? What kind of experiences do I want them to have? What kind of adults am I trying to raise here? And I identified kind of what my goals were for my kids. And from there, I started researching different educational philosophies that are common in the Western world. And I really landed on a classical education, but the classical model did seem really rigorous. And the days can be a little bit longer than what I wanted. And that led me into Charlotte Mason. And I would say she presents a lot of classical ideas with a really gentle approach and a very efficient approach. And that really grabbed me. And so I started reading Charlotte Mason stuff. I did look into unschooling a bit, and I really liked the child-led model and the real teaching through real-world hands-on experience. That really appealed to me. So I like to say I'm a classical home educator that delivers with a Charlotte Mason presentation and leaves lots of room for unschoolery. With my son, you know, we started when he was 3 with like the preschool stuff, and it just started with playing games. And I got like a deck of cards that were uppercase and lowercase letters, and I came up with silly games to play with him. And we spent a lot of time out in nature. I'm an avid hiker. And so I'd take him out a couple times a week hiking, and we'd play by the stream, and we'd take sticks and make letters, and we'd just count together. And I would just point, you know, point out like, oh, see that bird? That's a robin. And just very organically presenting the world to him because everything's new and exciting. So it was really easy initially. And preschool for us was really only about 20 minutes twice a week of actually like sitting down at the table, you know, maybe tracing some worksheets, learning how to hold a pencil, those types of things. A lot of it was just playing games and getting out in nature. And that's how I really started. I didn't bring in a lot of the more structured book work until I brought a little bit in kindergarten. And then we've done more of that this year. And I plan to just add a little bit more as he gets older and his attention span increases.
Okay, so you mentioned classical. I've heard of that, but I don't know even what that means. Like, could you give me an example of what the classical style of the education is?
Yeah, so classical education was the gold standard for a really long time. When we think about a lot of the great thinkers, you know, in the 1800s, a lot of them were classically educated. And it has its roots in ancient Greece and Rome with people like Aristotle. And the point of a classical education is to teach a child to seek out and love everything that is true and good and beautiful, and then produce adults that possess a natural desire to improve the world around them, serve their fellow man. They have really good critical thinking skills, and they're able to articulate their thoughts really well. And classical education is broken up into three main phases that go along with child development. And that's one of the things that appealed to me about it, because it really resonated with what I knew from working with kids. And the first stage is the grammar stage, and that's from kindergarten to about fourth or fifth grade. And at that phase, kids are just soaking in information. You use memorization, repetition. They're learning the what of the world around them, and you're just laying that foundation of, you know, how to write, basic writing and reading and arithmetic skills. And then the next phase would be the logic or dialectic phase, and it's from about grades 5 through 9. And during these years, kids, they develop more abstract reasoning ability, and so they're just growing and understanding, and they're getting down to learning about the why and the how of things, the nuts and bolts about how things work, and developing more of their language skills and growing in their mathematics skills. And then those high school years are called the rhetoric years, or the rhetoric stage. And at that point, they're applying and integrating the subjects. And they're at that point, they're able to do like kind of a deeper analysis and really learning how to articulate their ideas effectively. And so that would be the age when you could have a child read like, you know, some great work of literature, and then not just tell you what happened or why it happened, but really be able to like glean their own analysis from that about, you know, what does this tell me about the human condition?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Because thinking back to my days of schooling, I just a common thing that I felt like I always felt like whenever I read something, I didn't retain it or I didn't understand what it was saying. So, mm-hmm. And now that I'm older, I can read things, even, you know, I'll read medical studies, and it's not that I understand everything in it, but I understand the gist or the overall, or I'll be able to pick out words and be like, oh, see, they're saying it that way, but that's covering up something, you know, they're being too general there. It's yes. Covering up something. What are they covering up? I don't think it had anything to do with age. I do think it had something to do with either pushing an interest or, you know, glazing over. You don't need to know that stuff, you know?
I really liked the classical model because I felt like it really met the child where they were at with like what their brain was ready to do with information. You know, when they're really little, you don't need to teach them about the digestive system of a bird. They're not ready for that. They just want to know like what the different okay. birds are, and this bird is blue, and you know, what birds eat, and the really simple things. And then by the time they're teenagers, you know, they're really starting to build their identity and who am I? What do I think and believe about the world? That's where they're at anyway. And so a classical education really went hand in hand with that of like, all right, I'm going to be educating them and helping them reach those goals of who am I? What do I believe? How do I argue my ideas effectively? How do I analyze a counter argument? That's where they're at anyway. So it just felt like, oh, this seems very natural to me.
Yeah. Now, how does the Charlotte Mason aspect work with what you're doing? Because I've heard of her as well from my episode 2 with Katie. She talked about Charlotte Mason, and I haven't had a chance yet to delve into that.
So Charlotte Mason, she taught during the 1800s when classical education, again, was very common, kind of thought of as the gold standard. That's, you know, people that had money, that is how they would have been educating their children at the time. And there's a lot of overlap between Charlotte Mason and classical. However, Charlotte had some criticisms of classical education. And one of them was that it was too dry, too rigorous, kind of just cramming too much dry facts into a child's head. And she had the belief that children are born as whole people, not just empty vessels to be filled. And in her mind, education is the science of relations, meaning that through the presentation of living ideas and concepts, we create relationship between the student and the subject. So when I teach my kids history, we read a lot of like biographies. So my kids are getting those dry facts and dates and events, but they're getting it woven into the entire story through the tale of a person's life and the struggles that they had. And from there, you know, sometimes my child is having some experience or doing something or watching a movie, and they'll bring up, oh, you know, this is like the Pilgrims, and we have some discussion about it, and they have that kind of relationship in their brain. And so it helps them absorb those facts in a way that doesn't feel burdensome. Charlotte Mason also placed a real emphasis on time spent in nature and the study of nature. And in those early years, she also has a strong focus on habit training and raising a kid up in really good habits. In fact, she doesn't recommend starting with formal lessons until the age of 7. She says until the age of 7, children should be outside playing, being trained in good habits, and then being read a lot of beautiful poetry and literature, and just kind of, you just spread this feast of kind of the best ideas in front of them and let them just be children and absorb those first 7 years. She said about classical education as well, because classical education is very reason focused, very logic and reason focused. And she was, you know, she was like, that's good. You know, we need sound logic and reason, but we want to instill a child with really sound principles as well, so that their principles will inform their reason. And that I was actually thinking about this last night. And my kind of analysis of this is, if you had a very masculine based educational structure, it would look like a classical education. And then if you had more of the woman's touch maternal structure, it would look more like Charlotte Mason. Like, she kind of puts that woman's touch, more gentle, pretty, you know, work with the child, meet the child where they're at, kind of flow into those, you know, really great foundational classical ideas. I don't know if I'm explaining that well, but that's kind of what came up for me as I've researched both approaches.
It does. And so I know that there's a website, I think, for Charlotte Mason, but is it an actual curriculum, or is it just ideas that someone could incorporate into whatever sort of, whether it's an unschooling or a classical approach? Could anyone weave in Charlotte Mason, or does she have a curriculum? Here, you start this in kindergarten, you start this for first grade.
So yes to both. She definitely has ways she does things. So there are two big websites that come to mind for me. One is Simply Charlotte Mason. They have a full line of Charlotte Mason style curricula that you can buy. A free online curriculum is Ambleside Online, and they just have lists of like reading books and resources that they recommend you use, and kind of a layout of what you use when. I use Ambleside Online's reading recommendations. Also, you can just read her writings and study her methods and then implement her methods. I'll give you an example of one of her methods. The way she would do language arts is she would have a child. Now, if they aren't old enough to read, you would read them a passage or a story, and then you would have them narrate it back to you in their own words. And then when they're able, you have them do copy work from a passage, and then you would dictate to them and they would write down from what you're saying. And so I use the McGuffey readers. They're really old from the 1800s. but I love them because they're my spine. And so I use that Charlotte Mason method with my son where he reads a passage and like tells me about it. And then I have him do copy work. And then when I feel like he has absorbed most of the spelling words and punctuation and that type of thing from the passage, I'll kind of dictate it to him. And he tries to write it out with, you know, getting as much correct spelling and punctuation as he can. And we do that, but then within that, we also play games. So I teach spelling with phonics, and I'll use his spelling words and not just have him copy them down over and over, not just have him recite them to me, which, you know, that's another, that's a classical method approach. It's also Charlotte Mason, but it's really strongly in those grammar years. Classical education uses a lot of like having children repeat things over and over. Like my son will repeat his math problems, his addition and subtraction, to just memorize them. So he doesn't have to think what 8 minus 2 is. He can just tell me 8 minus 2 is 6. And mm-hmm. with the phonics, you know, I'll make games and, you know, yeah, it's kind of hard to describe because I don't use just some hard, dry curriculum that we're married to. I have some older books I use that are kind of a guide and a map. And then I'll play games and try to figure out all the different ways I can teach what's in that lesson, if that makes sense.
Now, do you have a background as a teacher?
I don't. I was actually just a hairdresser before I had my kids.
Wow.
So I just...
Wow. Well, not just a hairdresser, but wow. I mean, listening to you, it sounds like, you know, this is what you went and got, you know, 4 years of, you know, university experience and then another 2 years for a master's degree. Like you sound just so eloquent when you talk about it, like you studied it for years.
I mean, if that goes to show anything
for if we need these college degrees and master's degrees.
Yeah, well, exactly. And that was something, another thing that brought me to home education is I left the public school system just thinking I was an absolute idiot and I was bad at math and I can't do this and I can't do that. And then as I became an adult, I love to learn. I love ideas. And so I started teaching myself all kinds of things. Like I want to learn how to knit. You know, I found a friend that taught me how to knit. I want to make sourdough bread. I want to garden. And I learned all of these skills in adulthood. And it got me to think, wait a minute, I'm not an idiot. I'm just not good at sitting at a desk for 8 hours a day. And
yes.
So once I realized I can teach myself anything, I wanted to instill that in my kids. I wanted them to realize if you can read, you can learn anything.
I love that. Oh, that like gave me goosebumps. If I can teach myself, I want my kids to know that they can do that too. That's amazing. So, okay. So you have your 7-year-old, you've been doing the homeschool for 3 years. How is it working now that your little ones are getting into the homeschool and you're kind of balancing two different grade levels and then a little guy, or I'm sorry, is your 1-year-old a boy or girl?
Oh, so I've got my oldest is my son and then I have 2 little girls.
And then 2 girls. So now that you have like the little one running around and you're trying to do 2 homeschooling lessons, are you integrating what you teach the older two, or is it, how do you do that?
Oh, we're figuring it out.
So I was recently in Barnes & Noble, and this is a true story. And in the children's section, there were a few books that caught me off guard. Woke Baby, Pink is for Boys, Baby Feminists 2, meaning there's a Baby Feminist 1 out there somewhere, and The Gay BCs. I had heard about these books, but I didn't actually think that they were out there on shelves. So when I came across the Tuttle Twins book series, I really wanted to show support for books that discussed matters that actually affect us, like the law, inflation, and government involvement in things like small business. Not only do I want to support a company like that, but those are the subjects I want to expose my children to, not sexuality and gender identity. I purchased the Tuttle Twins combo pack for ages 5 to 11 and also the Tuttle Twins toddler book series, where instead of learning that D is for drag, we learn that D is for the Declaration of Independence. Even though my son is only 4, I've been able to read the combo pack books with him. We do a little bit each night, and I am so impressed with the real life lessons that they teach. And also with the illustrations that make the point that they're trying to get across so much clearer. It makes it entertaining for him as well. And I'm learning right along with him. These books go over real life scenarios like owning a food truck and how hard having a small business is and how it can be even harder when the government involvement starts to take over. They talk about inflation and all different aspects of economic principles, political principles, things that are really important and are just lacking in our schools these days. The Tuttle twins have a book on America's history from 1215 to 1776, and then a volume 2 from 1776 to 1791. They also have audiobooks and books for teenagers. The author is a homeschooling father himself. And if you want to check out more of their products, please use my link, which will show them that I sent you there. TuttleTwins.com/ref/Cheryl. That's TuttleTwins.com/REF/CHERYL. You can grab the link in my show's description.
I teach to my son typically, and it is nice, you know, having my kids be 3 years apart. You know, with my baby, you know, she's just being a baby. I'm not too worried about her. My preschooler, she doesn't, you know, I'm not too worried about, she's just going to absorb things from being in the world. I learned that with my son, like right out of the gate. I was so worried that I wouldn't be able to teach him how to read. And, you know, I had some of those worries too. So I was a little too intense with him for a little bit in preschool. And I realized that pretty soon and backed way off. So with him, I will do his lesson. And I have a little like Amazon workbook that I got for my daughter. And if she wants to do some schoolwork, I'll sit with her and, you know, talk about letters or have her do her counting sticks for a few minutes. And she'll often do that for about a half hour or something. And then she just goes and plays. She does really enjoy listening when I read aloud, like for our history curriculum, you know, if we're reading a biography or we've been finishing up. We're almost done with Treasure Island. We've been reading Treasure Island this year. Even though she doesn't grasp a lot of the language in it yet, she does enjoy just sitting and listening to the stories. And if she wants to chime in, you know, my son loves discussion, so he always has a million things he wants to talk to me about in the story, and we discuss it. And sometimes she wants to join in. I let her. So I kind of let her be as involved as she wants to be. And as she's getting older, she's just naturally wanting to be more involved. And it will be nice this fall because my son is old enough now and reads well enough that he is able to do a lot of his curriculum pretty open and go. I can just hand him handwriting and say, do 2 pages. Or I can hand him his McGuffey reader and say, copy your spelling words and then let me know when you're done and recite them to me. So I can kind of be at the table and hand him his stuff and jump in where he needs me. And then I'm going to be able to sit with my daughter a little bit more this fall and do some more formal lessons with her. And I figure that pattern's going to continue. Like once the baby's that preschool age, my daughter will be reading and more independent, and my son will be even more independent because at that point he'll be 9 and 10.
Oh, nice. It does manage to kind of work itself out. And I had someone tell me that they also teach to the oldest, and then the youngest ones pick up what they're ready for, and just hearing it helps. And then I also like the idea of, I find with my son who's 4, and then we have an 8-month-old, if I tell him, like, well, how about you read her a book? I mean, he can't read yet, but the baby books, you can look at the picture. And when you say what it is, that's pretty much what the book page says anyway. So, you know, he thinks he's reading to her, but he's looking at, you know, a page, he's looking at letters. So it's helping him, but him thinking he's helping teach solidifies it in his mind, you know, just a little bit more of what each letter is and the sounds they make. And we could discuss it as that happens. So it is nice. And you said something in the beginning of that sparked something in my mind. And I did this too. And I haven't fully committed to homeschooling yet. My son's in a preschool 3 days a week for 2.5 hours. But a year and a half ago, when we pulled him from daycare because they started masking the 3-year-olds, I started a preschool curriculum with him at home. It was, I think, Busy Toddlers. And it was great. It was so adorable. But I put a lot of pressure on myself because I was like, well, I don't want to look bad if he doesn't know how to read by the age they're supposed to know how to read, or just little, you know, marks of where he's supposed to be by what age. So I think homeschooling parents in particular put a lot of pressure on themselves to overdo it in the beginning, but it doesn't, like you said, you realize very quickly, it doesn't have to be that way. Things can come in time. It doesn't, like, the school classroom is what we're trying to get away from. That's why we're choosing to homeschool, right? And we're trying to make it better and easier and more healthy for our children. So we can't put the pressure on ourselves that they have in the classroom, because that comes down from funding and, you know, government regulations and restrictions and landmarks for funding purposes. So I think, like you said, it's important to realize we don't have to bog them down with that stuff, because we don't have those types of goals that we have to meet for funding purposes.
Yeah, with my son, because I felt, and it's probably all in my own head, but I felt a little under the microscope, because on both sides, like both sets of grandparents were kind of like, you're going to homeschool, huh? Okay. Yeah. And so yeah, I had that same thing that you have, where I'm like, you know, if my son isn't reading at 7, you know, there's going to be all of these comments made. And so I would spend time with him when he was like 2 and 3, like sitting and being like, this is an orange triangle. Let's count together. Let's say the ABCs. Because in my head, I was like, well, if I don't do this with him, he won't learn it. And he did. He learned it at about the average age. Every child learns it. And then my daughter came along. Mm-hmm. And when she was a toddler, I was having a lot of health issues, and we were just in survival mode. And I couldn't do that with her like I did with my son. And lo and behold, she learned all of the same things without me doing any of that at about the exact same time. You know, she just came up to me like, I kept her counting. And I'd be like, oh, you can count? She's like, yeah. And so I think we just forget that you can't keep your kid from learning, you know, like they're going to absorb what you put them around. So if you just read to them and you answer their questions and you give them opportunities of, you know, maybe you are doing some, you know, reading some books, you go to the grocery store and say, hey, you know, let's see if we can find any letters that you recognize. I remember doing that with my son when mm-hmm. he was 3, and he thought that was really fun. And you just mm-hmm. like, if you just give them the opportunity, they just soak it up.
Yeah. One thing I started doing when we're in the car, I'll say, okay, what letter do we want to look for? And let him pick a letter. And okay, we'll look for R. So, you know, on the street signs and, you know, building signs, whoever can spot the R's first, you know, wins. So there's an R. Or, I see one coming up. I see a sign coming up. Can you spot that R? And, you know, let him win a little bit. And so mm-hmm. that's kind of something nice. And like you said, with the grocery store, you can do the same thing there. And, you know, I got thinking, I did a post earlier this week about even just the, like, survival things that school doesn't really teach, and nobody really tells us as parents that we should be doing this stuff. But like being around pools, and because even if you don't have one, it doesn't mean your child will never be around one at a friend's house or a family member's house. And things like, you know, falling in a pool, with how does it feel when you're fully clothed to fall in a pool? You know, that's going to feel a lot different than jumping in with your bathing suit on. And, you know, talking about things like that and pool safety, or even, you know, what is your address? I started doing that with my son about a year ago when we're in the car. Just, you know, Colin, what's your address? Do you remember your address? Hey, can you give me your address? And when would we need to know that? And I mean, he did go up to like random strangers in the park and invite them to his birthday party and give him his address. So I guess I do have to have a better conversation with him about that. But if he is ever, you know, lost or kidnapped or whatever, just things like that, it's good to know. And things like how to use your cell phone in the emergency mode, because a lot of people don't have landlines anymore. Does your child know how to get to that 911 when your phone's locked? Things like that, that will teach them recognizing letters. Okay, you got to turn the screen on and you got to find where the E-M-E-R, you know. So little things like that I was just thinking about, and I should make more posts, but, you know, it's like, who has time? But those are the important things. And I don't know that school, I don't remember learning that stuff in school. I mean, granted, we didn't have cell phones when I was growing up in school, but just, you know, you learn stop, drop, and roll. And I feel like it ended there. But there's so many other little things we could be teaching them that make it broader.
Oh, definitely. That's another reason I wanted to homeschool as well, is I felt like I wanted my kids to know, I didn't just want to teach them reading, writing, and arithmetic. I wanted to educate their hearts and their minds and their souls. And I feel like schools don't put much emphasis on character either. They just, you know, beyond be nice, we don't talk about morals and ethics and honesty and why do we need to be honest and why do we need to be kind? And is it ever okay to not be kind? And when is it not, when is it okay to not be kind? And how do I balance my checkbook? How do I do my taxes? How does interest work on a loan? My family, yes. We're really outdoorsy. And so we're out in the woods all the time. So my kids know a lot about how to be safe in the woods, how to start a fire, what to do if you do get lost, you know, how to survive. They all have little backpacks with an emergency blanket and a flashlight and stuff in there and a whistle. And so all of those practical life skills, like you said, you know, safety around water out here in Idaho, my kids know safety around firearms because everybody, chances are if they go into a home, there's at least one gun in that home. And so they mm-hmm. need to know all of those real world skills beyond just, yeah, the bare bones basics of if you catch on fire, you know, like we, there's mm-hmm. so much more than that.
Yeah, I agree. The same thing. I'm trying to, I want to look into how, you know, my son knows a little bit of the safety around firearms as far as like when we're practicing at our shooting range, but to bring it into his level and how not to, you know, he, and it's hard too, because I started out with teaching him that his Nerf guns should be treated as a real firearm. So like, we don't point them at people and shoot them at people and this and that, but that's so difficult because then when friends would come over, they'd take it and shoot it at him. And he's like, Mom, he's shooting me with the Nerf gun. And I'm like, well, I mean, that is what they're made for. But when you think about it, why would they make a Nerf gun when they're also putting this big emphasis on, oh my gosh, we have to take away all the guns, they're so unsafe. Why is a Nerf gun still even on the product list, you know, on the toy shelves? That's a weird one. I'm sure there is some hidden reason behind that, you know, that the government just, oh, this will create controversy, let's do it. Is there a safe way? Do you have any, like, are there, can I go online and figure out how to do it myself? Or are there groups like, I don't know, 4-H or Boy Scouts that teach those
things?
Oh,
for like firearm safety?
Yeah.
Are you talking about firearm safety? So there probably are. My husband is a big, you know, he's an Idaho boy. So I mean, it's like by default, he's big into guns. And I didn't grow up with guns. Like when we got together, I was almost kind of nervous around them and, you know, kind of got through that from being with him. So he just taught our kids what we do. And, you know, every family's approach is different. Our kids are just taught, like my husband does take them shooting. And so, and they have their own little rifles and stuff. And he's taught them that, you know, firearm safety of, you know, you always stand behind and you don't ever put your finger on the trigger till you're ready to shoot. And you don't ever point at anything you don't want to kill or shoot, like that kind of thing. I wish off the top of my head, though, I do not know. I'm sure there's online resources and classes like for kids' firearm safety. Just, I mean, I'm fortunate to live in, fortunate or unfortunate, depending on who you ask, to live in a culture where that's kind of just woven in. Everybody teaches their kids about guns. Like with my kids, I have taught them if they ever see a gun out to just come get an adult. Like they don't touch it. They just come get an adult. Mm-hmm. And we were playing at a friend's house. And I always wondered, you know, is this absorbing? Like, would they actually do this? And we were playing at a friend's house mm-hmm. with a whole bunch of homeschool kids. And there was a 2-year-old there. And it was, I think it was a paintball gun, but it looked like a real gun. And the 2-year-old had yeah. like found this paintball gun and was carrying it. And my son runs in the living room, like hair on fire, and is like, Teddy has a gun. Teddy has a gun. You know, and all the moms immediately like jump up and rush over. And, you know, my friend was like, oh, okay, it's my husband, you know, paintball gun or whatever. And it was fine. But I told my son, I was so proud of him because I was like, that is exactly yeah. how you should have handled that situation. So it did make me feel good to know that, okay, the things I'm telling him are actually sinking in.
Absolutely. And that's a good reminder for all the listeners too, and myself, you know, to at 4 years old, it's the time to talk to him about that, you know, with our own firearms and going elsewhere. And I'm the same as you. I didn't grow up around guns. So I had that, you know, whole like belief that, oh, they're so bad. My husband did. And, you know, in the last couple of years, I'm pretty much like, all right, we're going to get our pistol permits. How many, you know, we got all the gun cabinets, everything's locked up, everything's safe. But yeah, I was like, no, stack up. We're going to need this stuff to trade when there's nothing on the shelves. We'll be trading ammo for cows. So, and actually it's a funny because now that in New York, Hochul passed that you cannot, even if you have a legal carry and conceal permit, you cannot carry and conceal into an establishment that doesn't say on the door, we welcome carry and conceal. Literally has to say, you are welcome here with your carry and conceal weapon. So when I went to go get a new internet box, it says right on the T-Mobile door, we do not allow firearms. So it didn't have to say that. Like that's just a given now in New York. But I looked at that and I'm like, well, now I feel unsafe coming in here because you're telling every criminal that wants to rob the place, hey, we're not going to fight back. Come and get it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes, like, exactly. Because the criminals don't care.
No, I mean, it's already illegal to steal and murder. So if they're willing mm-hmm. to forego that, they're not going to follow the other laws. So I'm yeah. like, geez, yeah. I'd rather go into an establishment that says you're welcome to carry and conceal here because somebody in there will be able to protect me when the criminals come in. I'm hoping at least. But yeah, New York's gotten tough.
Oh, yeah. You got to get out of New York. I don't know how anyone that has any streak of tradition or conservative values in them can hang in New York. It seems like it's a rough climate over there.
It absolutely is. And we love the land that we're on. All of our family, both sides are here. And, you know, it's hard. But my husband, he's in the trades. He could work anywhere. And if I leave my job to homeschool, then I, you know, so it's like so tempting. But maybe it's like, we're just going to stay and hold the fort down for any New Yorkers.
That's you know, true. Somebody's got to do it.
Yeah, I'm hoping. Well, you know, we'll see. Maybe someday we'll have to. Now, how do you socialize your kids now? That's the whole big, like, if you homeschool, they're going to be weird. They won't have any socialization, which I think we can all come to terms with that is not the truth. But how do you socialize your kids and get them out making friends?
So I feel like as a homeschooler, you can be as isolated as you want to be or as out there as you want to be, especially with things like Facebook. And when I had my son, I did not have any mom friends. I didn't have any friends with young kids. And I was really lonely that first year. And I am not a big social media user, but I was so desperate to get us out and have other moms and other kids for him to hang out with that I joined Facebook groups. I found homeschooling groups. I found children's hiking groups, like anything to get us out. We started going to those things. And then through those things, I met some like-minded mom friends who've become kind of my core group. We all have children like similar ages and we get together and go hiking together. We barbecue together. All of the husbands have become friends. And I also signed my kids up for, yes, like 4-H. My son is doing Clover Buds this year. He will probably do Boy Scouts because my husband loved Boy Scouts growing up. And so he wants my son to do Boy Scouts lessons. He's going to do swimming lessons. He did cross country ski lessons this winter. Any interest my child has, and anytime there's something fun going on that they want to do, we go out and do it. And my children are like my husband. They're all very extroverted. They require a lot of social stimulation. So I just am very mindful of that. And I will set up a couple get togethers with friends every week. They tend to see friends like 2 or 3 times a week. And then they go hang out with grandma one day a week. And so there's really usually not more than about 2 days in a row that we're ever just stuck at home. And we're really lucky in that we live on some acreage out in the country. And that has been great because I can send them outside to, you know, right now they're really into, my son's really into figuring out how bricks are made. And we have a lot of clay on the property. And so I've let him watch some YouTube videos about how to harvest clay and given him some buckets and pillowcases. And he's outside, you know, a lot trying to figure out how to harvest clay so he can make bricks. And I've told my husband, figure out where you want the kiln because we're going to be digging a primitive pit kiln so Finn can fire his bricks. So, wow. I mean, we're doing a lot of just anytime there's an opportunity, I just get my kids out. So I feel like my kids are weird in that they aren't exposed to a lot of pop culture And so my son will sit and read things like Aesop's Fables and think that's really cool. Whereas if he was in public school, he probably would not be coming up to me and being like, "Mom, did you know honesty is the best policy? Let me tell you this story I read about a fox." Like,
are you looking for a comprehensive homeschooling solution? It can be so confusing out there, especially when you're just getting started. My Homeschool Village has got you covered. They provide everything you need to homeschool successfully, including customizable lesson plans, interactive curriculum materials, and a community of experienced homeschoolers to help guide you along the way. Check out my episode with Becky, co-creator of My Homeschool Village. The episode is called Why It Takes a Village: Learn the Secrets to Homeschooling from a Mom Who Started 20 Years Ago. And that was aired on May 5th, 2023. With their easy-to-use platform, you'll have access to a wealth of resources and support to ensure your homeschooling journey is a success. Join My Homeschool Village today at myhomeschoolvillage.com and discover how easy and rewarding homeschooling can be. Use code HOW250 to get 50% off of your first year if you sign up now. That's H-O-W with the numbers 250. HOW250. And you can check that out with the link and the code right in my show's description.
So he's a little bit weird in that he loves to watch old movies and read Aesop's Fables and like older books because that's what's normal in our home. But if you put him around other children as far as how he's able to interact with them, I don't think he sticks out as a weird kid at all. Like, he's just very kind and he'll play with just about anyone because he's used to mixed age play.
Yes. You know, I realized recently, you know, my son is 4, he'll be 5 soon. And when we have play dates with other kids, he gets very competitive. And I'm like, why do you do that? Why do you get competitive? Well, then I realized that as I'm trying to read with, or get him to learn how to read, I'm like, you know, Gabriel can read. I wonder why he's competitive. So like, that's clearly my fault. So now I have to learn how to undo that and just, you know, instead of trying to get him to want to learn something so he's not behind a friend. Just get him to want to learn something because it's what he wants to learn. And, you know, you find that as you parent, because there isn't any handbook, as long as, you know, you make mistakes along the way. We all do. So as long as you can kind of see that and then correct him early on, you know, that's good. But talking about the weird, you know, you look at some of the kids that go to school these days, and especially after COVID, where they just normalized like covering your face and sitting 6 feet away and putting up plexiglass and, you know, okay, all the preschoolers sit in your own hula hoop and don't share. I mean, they literally taught them don't share toys. How crazy is that? We send them to preschool to learn how to share. And when my son goes to preschool, he sits down and he's got his own little box of the toys that he can play with, but he can't take toys from the person next to his box. And I'm like, I really highly doubt that they are cleaning every single toy every night. So what is the, and they trade boxes. So what's the point in all of this? It's like you said before, you're sending them there to be like regurgitative factory workers. Like, well, I know that I have to play with my own toys. Tomorrow I can play with those toys, but I don't know the why. Or, and even if they say for germs, well, how? Explain that to me. If I'm touching these toys today and then she's going to touch the same toys tomorrow, how is that stopping the germs? And why do we want to stop the germs? Could germs be good for you? Could germs be good for your body? Your body will learn how to fight the germs if you expose them. And, you know, just that's what I really want to nurture in my son. And now that he's like actually in a school, and I do love the school, they're very nice, but I can see so many things that I don't agree with. And, you know, this podcast has really helped me because I don't think I'd think of it elsewhere. You know, if I didn't have the podcast and I wasn't talking to other parents about it, I don't think my brain would even connect these little dots that I don't like that I'm seeing, you know?
Yeah, that you talking about that brings up a video I recently saw. It was a snippet of an interview with John Taylor Gatto, who I'm sure you have heard of or might be familiar with.
Yeah, Dumbing Us Down. Yep.
Yes. Yeah, I read one of his books when I was deciding to homeschool, and I would encourage anyone that's interested in this to go to YouTube and look up John Taylor Gatto, The Six Purposes of Schooling, because it was chilling. Like, this video was really chilling. And he is talking about how in 1917, Alexander James Ingalls was the honor lecturer at Harvard, and he gave a speech on this. And these are excerpts mm-hmm. from a book that Ingalls wrote. And unfortunately, the six principles of schooling are not the things that you'd think, like proficiency in math or raising the next generation of problem solvers. One of them was...
I have it right here.
It was like, schools are to establish...
Yes, because...
Do you know what I'm talking about?
The episode I just released.
It's so creepy.
The episode I released with Chris from 6-7 Podcast, we discussed this. So for anyone that wants to check that out, it's episode 12.
Yes, yes. It's really creepy stuff. And you talking about, you know... You just have to do what we say, even though it doesn't make any sense. Let's see. The speech that I was referencing, and it might be covering the same information. It was
okay.
Alexander James Ingalls, and he was the 1917 honor lecturer in education at Harvard.
That was the six principles of schooling?
So, yes, it's the six purposes of schooling or principles of education. And one of them was that schools are to establish fixed habits of reaction to authority. And John Taylor Gatto in the video argues that you don't, he's like, humans will naturally follow instructions that make sense. So you don't test whether someone, you know, has this principle instilled in them through giving them instructions that make sense. You test it by giving them instructions that don't make sense and seeing if they follow it just because it comes from an authority. And I thought with everything we've gone through the last 3 years, like how yes. chilling that was to me. Like, oh, well, you know, the expert said this. And even though it doesn't make logical sense with everything else I know about reality,
yeah.
I'm going to do it. Some of the other things that were mentioned was that the purpose of education is to make children as alike as possible, therefore making their reactions consistent and predictable. Some of the other things were, you know, things like kind of labeling the kids that don't perform well with bad grades and, you know, kind of hanging, you know, those bad grades around their neck. So it will be really hard for them to rise through the wow. ranks of society later. And for me, this really brought up in high school, I remember having some friends whose older brothers dropped out. And in our heads, I feel like a lot of the time we think of the high school dropouts as the dumb kids. But my experience was a lot of the kids I, you know, met that dropped out were actually really smart, creative, independent thinkers. They just couldn't handle, you know, sitting at a desk, being forced into a mold. And so it's almost a way to kind of shuttle out the kids that are going to be mm-hmm. trouble, are going to be hard to control. You just kind of label, you know, they're going to get bad grades, they're going to drop out. And the kids that you elevate and reward with positions yes. of authority are the rule followers.
Absolutely. Yes. And then they probably try to get the ones that dropped out on some sort of drug or alcohol, you know, to kind of dumb them down to be easier to control.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. To make them chained to addiction, enslaved by poverty, you know, because if you don't get a high school diploma in our culture, it can be very difficult to get a job. You know, right there's a door slammed in your face if you aren't willing to jump through this first hoop. And it used to be even like the college, you know, you used to need yeah. that college degree. I do see that changing. You know, I yeah. tell my kids to probably plan on going to trade school because I think we are seeing kind of a return to the trades. And I've known a lot of tradesmen who built their own businesses and make a lot of money for themselves. And so I've told my kids, like, hey, if you want to be a lawyer or a surgeon or something where you have to go to college, great. But I would almost suggest you, you know, get a trade and work for yourself.
Absolutely. My husband's in commercial HVAC, and I try to tell him all the time, leave the company and start your own. But he just thinks that, well, I'd never be home and this and that. And it's just so hard to find employees right now, too. But, mm-hmm. you know, I really... His company was so great when I first met him, but just you can see how it got bought and more corporate, and it's just nothing like it was before. So what I was referencing was Alwin Toffler. He describes in his book from the 70s, Future Shock, how the American education model, and it came from the Prussian model, which was, it consisted of three courses: punctuality, obedience, and repetitive work, the basic training requirements to produce reliable, productive factory workers. So it goes right in line with what you were talking about. It's that is what it is. I know, I feel like anytime I post anything about my podcast on my actual, my personal Facebook page, my friends that are teachers think I'm putting them down. And it's not the case at all. They are victims of this educational model, and they just haven't been able to see, the curtain has not been unveiled to them yet because they're so deep into it. And they're doing everything right that they can, even if they can see through it. There's nothing they can do to change it because it just comes from so higher up and so long ago, like since the beginning of, you know, our public education system. So I think, you know, teachers are amazing for doing what they're doing. None of them are in there like, I'm trying to make factory workers. They think they are trying to, you know, make these creative, independent thinkers. But at the same time, they're being given information that is basically like false pretenses, you know, so it's a very woven web. And I think the people that are pulling their kids out and saying, I'm going to homeschool, that's how we're taking control and taking the reins. I don't think it's something you can do from within at this point. I think in the future, you know, we can probably get there if enough of us pull our kids out and say we're going to homeschool because we are standing against this, you know, groupthink mentality.
Yeah, I agree. I have some teachers in my family and they're wonderful people and they're passionate about teaching and what they do. But you're right. They're in a corrupt system. They're functioning within this really corrupt system and they don't have the level of control that they need to really do the job in an effective way. And so I'm hoping, yes, as things go forward and more people are waking up to what's going on in our schools, we will see more types of schools cropping up. We'll see more home educators get together and start things. And then we, you know, I believe in school choice, you know, and then parents can, if they do want to send their child to a school, they can choose what school, you know, to send their children to. And I think that competition will create, you know, a much better model than what we currently have.
Absolutely. I know there's a woman, Lila Sentner. She's down in Miami, Florida, and her and her husband created their own school. She's been on the High Wire a couple times to talk about it. And it's just a lot of like forestry things. They grow their own food. That's what they serve there for lunch, breakfast and lunches, is their own food that the children work to grow. I mean, how amazing. But that's just one awesome school. So we need a lot more of those. Hopefully that will be the future. So is there anything else that you wanted to make sure that we got in today to talk about? Because we're at about 51 minutes. So I don't want to leave you and then have you think of something later and say, oh, we never got a chance to talk about that.
So something that parents talk about a lot is when your children are infants and toddlers, the magic of watching them take their first steps or when they say mommy for the first time. All of those firsts are so magical to see. But as your child continues to learn and grow, that's just as magical. I remember the time that my son looked at a word and sounded it out on his own for the first time and then just looked at me with this light in his eyes. He was so proud of himself. And there's something magical about watching your kids blossom even after those toddler years. And I feel so privileged that I get to be there and be the person that gets to watch them have all of those firsts.
Amazing.
To any parent that is worried, you know, can I do this? I feel like if you want to do it and you're willing to be consistent, that's the most important thing with homeschooling, no matter what educational philosophy you go with. Just be consistent, you know, just pick a schedule and stick to it and work to do it every day. And some days will go great and you'll think, man, we're really doing this. And some days everyone will be crying and someone's going to poop their pants. And that's okay too. Like that's just part of the journey, especially if you're dealing with young students. I have some resources that I would share of, you know, just resources I've used that I've really liked. I mentioned AmblesideOnline.org is really great if you're looking, even if you're a public schooler and you're like, I just want to feed my kids some fantastic literature. They have really great book lists for all the different grades. Simply Charlotte Mason. Mott Media is where I get my Raise Arithmetic and my McGuffey readers. And then for history, we use Beautiful Feet Books, and it's a literature-based history curriculum where you just read a lot of historically accurate stories and children's biographies. I've really enjoyed that. And then a great science curriculum I came across. I'm going to wait till my kids are a little older to use this, but it comes with a bunch of, you know, books to read to them about the topic, and it comes with all the things you need for the science experiments in the box, which I love this because I'm really open and go. It's NOEO Science, and that's spelled N-O-E-O Science. They're actually an Idaho company. And then one other website
they're not from China?
No, they're an Idaho company, and that made me even more excited to use them.
Fantastic.
And then the last one I would say is Mom Delights. I would check out her website. She, I think, had 15 kids that she homeschooled, and she seems to have really nailed down this efficiency piece to homeschooling and finding the most effective, you know, ways to homeschool, especially if you have a lot of kids. And she has a lot of free resources and free PDFs and printables on her website. So those are just some things that to go check out if you want to explore, you know, kind of a classical or Charlotte Mason, you know, style philosophy.
And I will put the links to those in the show's description. So for anyone listening, go there if you just want the link. You don't have to run and find a pen. That is awesome. Thank you so much for sharing those.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Well, Hillary, I can't thank you enough for being here today and sharing your wealth of knowledge on the subjects.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Homeschool How-To. If you've enjoyed what you heard, please consider helping me out by sharing this podcast with friends, with your homeschool community, and even to your favorite homeschool group Facebook page. As a new podcast, we're really trying to get our episodes out there so that we can keep going. Also, if you'd like to be a guest on the show and tell us about your homeschooling experience, email me at thehomeschoolhowto@gmail.com or visit thehomeschoolhowto.com and send me a message through Facebook or Instagram. Thank you for your time and for your love of the next generation. We'll see you next week.